Gracious me.
Doctor, I'm in trouble. Doctor, I'm in trouble.
Mr. Bourne.
Good morning, my friends.
Mr. Strachan, how are you, my handsome friend?
Not bad. My feet are a little bit cold because I've been relegated to my camper van to do any kind of work.
Mate, we are the camper twins, buddy. We are both in camper vans.
I don't know about you, but my house has been completely taken over by screaming kids, junk and Lego and laptops. There's laptops everywhere.
Yeah.
None of which are mine. Yeah, we're in a full-on COVID lockdown, aren't we?
It's the most beautiful of third world problems, isn't it? When you've got a house full of mobile phones as well as laptops, all vying for top juice. It's the work laptop that seems to come out worst. I don't know what the others are doing, but you know, it's just literally just draining, you know. But
yeah, draining your Wi-Fi because the kids are streaming YouTube.
Yeah. But you seem to be, you've got quite a lot of cold breath coming out there, Daz. What's going on with the insulation of the camper van?
Oh, so this camper van is 1985. It has zero insulation whatsoever. Yeah. And it gets quite a lot of condensation on the inside if it's not being aired.
Right.
In fact, just before New Year, I noticed that there was something wrong with my camper van when I looked out of the window of the house. And the camper van was covered in condensation from the inside.
Yeah.
And the curtains were drawn. And alarm bells started ringing immediately because the only conclusion was that somebody or persons were asleep in my camper van.
Who's been sleeping in my camper? Who was it,
Dad? Sleeping in my camper van. So I came out of the house with the camper van keys a little bit nervously, and I opened the sliding door of the camper van to find three, let's just say, gentlemen asleep in my camper van. And bearing in mind that this was 11:30 in the morning, it was a little bit sort of a late lie-in for them. And I said, hey dudes, what are you doing in my camper van? And one of them said, my name is Magic, but it appears right now that all the magic is gone.
Oh, mate, that is priceless.
Yeah. So I put on my very best British sense of humour and said, I'm going to make you a hot cup of tea and you've got 5 minutes to sort yourselves out and get out my camper van before I call the cops. So, yeah, they did. They left it in a nice state for me to clean up. I won't disgust our listeners with the detail, but yeah.
Classy, buddy. What are we doing here today, Daz? What's the purpose?
Well, I mean, we're rebranding, aren't we?
Boom.
Obviously, this podcast was called Legends of Spartathlon because the two of us are absolutely obsessed with Spartathlon. Indeed. It is a running podcast, by the way, for anybody who's new to it. But we've decided that we're going to branch out, aren't we? Because the whole ultra world is bigger than just our beloved race. And we're going to branch out and talk about other races.
Wow. There are other races in the world other than Spartathlon?
There's not really, is there? I mean, the rest are secondary, but, you know, yeah, there's other races. There's other stuff that I'm sure people want to hear about and we want to talk about and we'd love to do. So, yeah, what are we calling it? No,
we absolutely no idea.
We don't know, do we?
I was really hoping for some divine inspiration from our first guest. I think that's going to be one of the first questions on my lips.
What should we call the podcast?
What should we call it?
Oh, I want to call it Legends of Ultra, but I think you think that's just a bit crap, don't you? So
yeah, well, I think there's a great opportunity to speak to some up and coming runners who maybe not have done any ultras.
I mean, it can't just be called Legends of Running.
Law of running.
We'd be done for copyright infringement by Dr. Noakes, wouldn't we?
Dr. Noakes, yeah. Or Guy Ritchie.
Or Guy Ritchie. So you got something called Lore?
Have you watched the Gentleman movie with Matthew McConaughey and Hugh Grant?
I have not, but it sounds good.
Well, I'm not sure if it's good, but it's kind of, it's interesting. A lot of it is basically filmed in his pubs. And so each of the characters are taking it in turns to pull pints because he brews his own real ale. And I'm sure one of them's called like the Law of the Land.
You're right.
We've been in there together.
That's the one. Yeah, I mean, Ritchie does that quite a lot with his movies, actually. So I was watching Sherlock Holmes the other day, and there's a fight scene in Sherlock Holmes, which is outside the punch bowl, which is a nice little.
Is there any running in that movie, Dad?
There's a strange kind of running scene where one of the characters escapes something that's going on at the Houses of Parliament. It's kind of like a sort of Guy Fawkes kind of bombing scene, except with chemicals. And they kind of run off. And before you know it, they're standing on top of Tower Bridge, which is kind of unfeasible. But, but you know, you have to...
Park was created.
Yeah, I mean, we should check if there's a segment for that. Yeah, Strava segment. That's one thing that I've been getting up to, actually, during this COVID times, is I've got this really sort of sad streak of seeing who can run round the park most often on Strava, the local legend.
The legend of Finsbury Park.
I've not started on that one yet. So I'm the legend of Clissold Park for a few segments, but I've got a new sort of Strava friend. We're sort of vying with each other. So you can run around the park most times.
Out him, Dad. Who is it? Who is this? Rival?
His name is Tim Farrell.
Streaky Tim.
I'm not quite sure if Tim knows what he's got himself into.
Like a duel, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's quite good fun. What about you, mate? How's your running been?
Yeah, it's been good. Yeah, I'm like the honeypot of FKT. I get these strange messages in the night about people that want to do FKTs. So, for a couple of little secret bubbles. And just been kind of keeping ourselves to ourselves. It's all you can do, really, isn't it, buddy?
Yeah, you've been forming FKT bubbles with people, have you?
Well, the maximum is two, isn't it? A bubble of two.
An FKT bubble pair of two, yeah. It's true, actually. I mean, there's nothing to stop two pair bubbles going off onto an FKT, is there, and being separated by, a mile or something like that.
Then again, I guess one bubble would be victorious over the other bubble, wouldn't they? Probably.
They would be, but that could be quite a good bit of added spice to the whole FKT thing, couldn't it? Yeah.
I like the idea of meeting up for a loop FKT and going off in separate directions.
Yeah, and meeting at both sides of the loop. That's a bit how the Barclay finishes, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. If you're in the sort, is it in the lead, you choose which direction you want to take the final loop, don't you?
Yeah, you do. And then the second person, if there's still two people left, they have to take the opposite.
Very good question for our first podcast guest, Daz. Dun, dun,
and she's, dun. She's just arrived. So welcome to the podcast, Scottish Ultra Legends, Debbie Morrison-Consani.
My goodness, Debbie? What an introduction. I'm great, thank you. How are you guys?
Yeah, really good. Thanks, Debbie. Thanks a lot for coming on. So,
thank you for asking me.
This is it's actually the first episode we've done where David is actually the odd one out in terms of the accents.
David's the odd one out wherever he goes. Surely,
David is the odd one out. So yeah, it's usually the guest who is clearly struggling to understand what I'm saying. And David kind of acting as a bit of an interpreter. But this time round, that's
it.
That's not the case.
So he's fluent now, surely.
Well, I don't think he is, Debbie, actually. So I thought what we'd do is we'd start by ganging up on David and giving David a bit of a Scottish word quiz. Yeah, so, and see just how much he's picked up from, over the course of his life.
It's fine. What you don't know is that I've had private Scottish lessons from Dan Lawson. So,
tuition. Oh, Dan.
I'm fairly fluent. There's nothing you can pull the wool over my eyes.
Okay.
I've heard quite a few interviews with Dan, and he randomly throws in middle of sentence, taps off.
Was it gun?
It's not even in context, people. But like, I was just spinning along, having a nice little day, taps off.
Oh, it's brilliant. Right, so whilst
come on, Daz,
Debbie thinks up a couple of words, I'm gonna you need to tell us what do the words mean, David. So I'm gonna start off with tuchter. What does tuchter mean?
Tuchter.
Yeah.
I don't know. It sounds sort of like the thing when you've started off on sort of Newquay brown ale, and then you've decided to sort of step it up a little bit with some. What was that, Buckfast? And then you kind of leant over a fence and you've had a bit of a shooter. Is that what it is? Is that like when you're spewing your guts up?
Close.
Oh, that's not far off. So it basically means a sort of like a farm person or a country bumpkin.
Ah.
I thought it was like Highlanders.
Well, I think it's a Doric word, isn't it? It's like it could be a Highlanders, country person. Yeah. What about Swetchy?
Swetchy.
Yeah.
Oh, it sounds like if they were to do like a Scottish version of like Cobra Kai, it would be like one of those, like, you know, like wedgie on the karate mat things. Is that what it is? Is it sort of like a Scottish karate move?
Yeah.
Wedgie! No mercy! Swetchy! Taps off!
Taps off!
Taps off!
You can't say taps off!
that's like a Gretna Green version. It's just so broader, isn't it?
It's like people who say football.
Put me out my business.
It's a lot simpler. So it's a Scottish word for sweetie. A
sweetie.
Not as in sweetie person, just as in a sweetie that you eat.
Yeah. Is there a real Scottish word for, you know, like when you deep fry everything, which you do, don't you, you guys?
We do.
Is there a Scottish word other than sort of just deep fried Mars bar?
Yeah, it's called dinner.
Dinner.
Your tea.
It's called ultra nutrition.
Oh, there we go. What about you, Debbie? Scottish word for David?
Oh my goodness. Mock it.
Mock it? Mock it. That sounds like do you remember that game? Like you and your family, dreadful game where you have to press the button down really quick. Mock it! Mock it! Do you remember that one?
That was called Pop It.
Pop It! It's just like, that's what I mean. It's Scottish rebranding of things that work well in the English language. It's your own version. Mock it! What is it, Debbie?
It means dirty, but as in like physically muddy dirty, not of dirty mind.
Like you've just stepped off the trails.
Yeah, you've just rolled in some mud. You're pure mocket.
Yeah. Do you know what I did today? Do you know what I did today, Debbie?
What's that?
This is a confession on the podcast. I washed my legs in the toilet today.
Wow.
Without bath has been like being turfed out. So we didn't have a available bathroom. I came in the house all mucky from doing a run. I thought, I've got to get some of this mud off my legs. And I just, the first thing came to my mind was wash them in. Why not?
You don't have a kitchen sink, no?
The kids are in the kitchen, Debbie. This is the third world problem. The school is the kitchen. The bathroom's out of order. All I could do, like if I'd have like an outside puddle, I'd have been in it. But yeah.
You've got to question yourself when you get to a crossroads in your life where washing yourself in the toilet seems like a reasonable solution.
Yeah, but you must have done worse, like in some of those epic, like there must be a spine story where you've just thought like,
no, I just didn't wash.
Mock
just
it.
Went with the flow. Pure mock it.
Pure mock it.
Yeah, okay. Do I need to have another one now?
No, we're done.
We'll move on.
Thank goodness, we could be here all day.
Yeah. We could do a whole episode on Scottish words. Actually, we'll keep that as a feature.
We should bring in Dan for his what he thinks they mean.
Can you get Scottish on Duolingo?
Oh, I don't think it's an actual language.
It should be.
It's just a dialect.
All right, so I guess we'll kick off. David, this is one of your questions, I think. But the Marcus on Debbie, how did it go this year? Did you manage to keep that going with a
I think every year. I think this was the 12th year this year, and every year it just gets a little bit more crazy. But yeah, it was good this year. It was a really strong year. I just think people needed that focus. It was great. It was brilliant. It was, but yeah, I'm glad it's over. But the good thing is, I think this year, every year it kind of self-polices itself. So whereas previously I could spend a solid month just answering the same questions, whereas now there's so many people that are involved in it and there's so many people on the group that I didn't really have to get, I didn't have the time to do it this year anyway, in terms of the admin of it. So, but yeah, it was really good. It was brilliant.
Did it feel different, Debbie, this year? Because obviously there's a lot of virtual type things, aren't there, where, you know, people may be replicating running across America or joggle or something.
No, I thought, you know, in the run up to it, you know, Markathon is almost like a virtual event, which started years ago, way before anyone had even heard of doing anything virtually. So I thought maybe with the run up to it that everyone else might have been a little bit bored with it all, and there's so many other options out there, but it didn't really affect it. I think it's really different because, you know, the marathon's free and there's no proof and there's no medals and there's no t-shirts and there's just no reason to do it really, other than for that personal challenge. And I think it's still a different event as such, so it didn't really change it. If anything, it just got stronger this year.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's such a beautiful thing. Daz, I think it's only fair to say, is this the fourth year in a row that you bummed out, Daz, and failed to do it?
I didn't even know that, but now that you've just outed him.
Yeah, I've never made it past day 11 actually, and this time round it was pretty much the classic hangover that did me in. I think I found myself one night having sort of opened some wine a little bit early and a box of chocolates, and there was something on Netflix, and I just crumbled.
It's ridiculous. No wonder you've been exiled.
Yeah, exactly. So Debbie, we should probably talk about some ultras. Just kind of, it's so one of the things we always do is look back at people's DUV to kind of see what sort of stuff they've done, and you've got a pretty incredible sort of DUV set of entries. So you started ultra running back in sort of 07 or 08.
2007. I did the Devil of the Highlands. That was my first and to be only ultra run. I think back then there wasn't
a lot of time, was it?
Yeah, I think way back in 2007. Well, you think about the boom in ultra running over the last, say, 5, 6, 7 years. In 2007, there wasn't that many ultra races, not any locally in Scotland anyway. And I was doing a lot of Munro bagging around then.
Right.
And I realised that I was still doing quite a lot of running. I'd only been running for maybe 5 years then. And I loved being out in the hills and out in the trails. And I was just looking for something that combined both. And I found the website for the Devil of the Highlands and signed up on a whim. And it nearly broke me. But it was it wasn't a pretty state at the end of it. But I loved it. Absolutely loved it. So
that was the one that you kind of fell in love with.
Yeah, I went back and did it five times. It's a great race. Yeah,
that's fantastic.
So that's how it all started.
And at what point did you kind of get the feeling that you pretty good at this stuff? Because it's interesting looking at the kind of the run of places that you had. So the first couple of races you did, you kind of, you know, you're, I think the first time you did the West Highland Way, you're sort of 80th and 15th female, and that's in 2008. And then the next
year,
I
should clarify that year. I didn't realize I was 10 weeks pregnant at the time.
No way.
Really? I did the first race in 2007, and then my first West Highland Way race was 2008, and I felt awful from about 50 miles, and I walked the last 40 miles, and then subsequently discovered I wasn't unwell. I was actually just 10 weeks pregnant. So it's an unorthodox approach to your first 100 miler, but I think then I realized how stubborn I am.
Yeah, that's something that kind of comes through in your like, so sort of 2000. That explains why there's nothing in 2009.
That does explain. Oh no, I did the Devil of the Highlands then.
Okay, maybe just
and then the year after I went back and did the West Highland Way and got a nice 11 hour PB. So
you smashed it that year. Yeah. Is that when, is it sort of 2010 then, once Karen was a little bit older than, and you started doing a few more races, is that when you kind of realized, actually, you know, I can do this stuff?
I did my first marathon in 2004, and I got a negative split in that marathon, so I think I probably enjoy longer distance running. I don't have the raw speed to compete very well at shorter distances. But I think after I had Cairn, maybe I just trained a little bit smarter. I think I'm just better at pacing and managing things better in races, longer distance races. And I just enjoy it more, to be honest. I'm a bit lazy. I love a good slow plod. So, definitely after Cairn. But I think it was more down to conditioning and training specifically rather than anything that just magically happened.
Were there many other sort of runners around, Debbie? Like, did you foster a sort of community of ultra friends back then? Or was it much harder to sort of find others?
No, there was this, that even still there's like, well, we call them the kind of old school group. There was a core group of maybe about 10, 20 people who were really focusing on the West Highland Way race. We kind of played off each other. But I think back then, even then, we were all just kind of running blinds. Like nobody had any idea of what we were doing. I think back then everyone was like, oh, back-to-backs have to be the bread and butter of training. Like you've got to go out and run 30 miles on a Saturday and 20 miles on a Sunday. Mm-hmm. And I used to do that because I just thought that's what you had to do. And now I haven't done a back-to-back long run for a long time. And I don't know whether it's because I don't feel I need to, or maybe I did that for so long that I'm conditioned enough not to have to do that. But we were all just winging it back then, and we still are. But yeah, even then, when I look back at it, I think, have we lost David?
Yeah, we've lost him. dodgy internet in Hackney.
Even back then I think we were all just winging it, but there was a core group and we kind of played off each other a little bit, but it was good because it wasn't the same kind of information that's available now. Like, you know, if you wanted to add a problem or you had a query, you could jump on Facebook and there'd always be someone that could answer it or give advice, and that just wasn't available back then.
So when we look back on that set of races, we've done you know, a lot of stuff that there is to do in the ultra world. If you had to pick a kind of top couple of standout things that you've done, like standout races or standout moments, it doesn't have to be a race. It could be the Bob Graham or whatever. What would you pick as your top two or three kind of moments or highlights?
What would be my best races or my best performances or experiences?
Just experiences. So think things that it doesn't have to be a performance, just things that you look back on and think, bloody hell, I love that one.
I think two of my favorite races are not probably races that I didn't form well overall, but for me they were really good races for me. And one was the Highland Fling, where it was like the British Trials, and I was sixth in that race. And it just, the stars aligned for me that day. So it was just one of my best races where things, you know, the training came together, the race came together on the day, and I achieved exactly what I wanted to. So yeah. That always stands out as one of my favorites. And the Lakeland 50 is another one. I was second that year, and the year before I actually won the Lakeland 100. So, but again, it was just one of those races where things just worked out, and I was just really pleased with how things worked out. So they were my two in terms of racings, but in terms of like challenges, I think the spine is probably one of the things that I am, yeah, I'm really pleased about that for sure. But yeah, it's hard because they're all really different, aren't they? You have different experiences and things go wrong and go right in all different events, so it's hard to just kind of pinpoint a couple.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they're all really different experiences for sure. So, but yeah, I think if I was to, you know, just to look back on some of the highlights, that would be my top three, I think.
Yeah. I know you've got dreams. You've got spine dreams, David, haven't you? Do you want to take a minute or two to ask for you and Debbie to have a spine chat?
Spine chat.
I mean, it just looks insane, Debbie. I mean, I think, as you know, someone who spends most of my time running around flat parks of London, it just looks sort of gnarly on completely every level. One of the things I've always been very impressed about you, Debbie, is that you train extremely well. You know, you get into the environments of the where you're going to be doing your races. Is that the strongest advice for someone looking to do the spine, is to get onto that route and understand it better?
I think I didn't really have aspirations of doing the spine until quite late on, not last year, the year before. I've always followed it. I've been an avid dot watcher. I've always been very inspired by people who even stood on the start line just to give it a go, because it is a massive undertaking, and it's, you know, its reputation is built on just pure misery. So yeah, when I the Pennine Way's got a bit of a bad rep as bog fest, which is not very pleasant, and that's mostly true. I'm not gonna lie to you, even in the summer I can imagine it's quite a hostile place. But I was out on the course for quite a few days last year. I don't really like surprises. I like to know what's happening. I like to know what to expect, and if you know what's coming up, it just takes away some of the mental strain in a race, especially in a race where you've got to navigate by yourself in 16 hours of darkness. So I spent quite a few days just out on the course from like 100 miles north. I covered most of it. It's not as bad as people make out. It's uniquely challenging, but it's like nothing I've ever run on before. It's hard to explain. There's no rhyme or reason to the route. There's no route per se in most of it. There's a lot of bog. There's a lot of bog. Your feet are wet from the moment you step out the car. So it was just really good to get out there and experience it. You know, hats off to anyone who takes on the spine having never been on the Pennine Way. You know, I was round about a Japanese guy last year, and you know, for someone to come across thinking they're going to experience the English countryside and get and get dumped on the Pennine Way in January, that must be like a massive shock to the system. So yeah, I think the best advice I can give anyone is just to get out there and experience it and try and learn a little bit about it, because you will spend hours just circling lost in a field. And it's, yeah, it just takes, I think if you know what's coming up, it just takes that little bit of pressure off.
Obviously, that, you know, it's a multi-day, and, you know, through the day, you know, as you're getting, you know, more weary, how do you personally deal with the kind of, you know, when you take your breaks and like the sleep? The small amount of sleep that you would have had yourself, Debbie, you know, how do you sort of like plan for that or cope with it?
I don't think you can plan for it. I think with the best will in the world, you can have as many spreadsheets and race strategies as you like. But I'm guessing as soon as you leave Edale, you just have to deal with what's thrown at you rather than meticulously planning what you want to do. It's just the spine is very unique, as in, you know, a lot of people, I don't know if a lot of people will be racing as such. You know, last year, I'm guessing it got quite exciting with John Kelly and Jason up at the front. And I'm sure they were acutely aware of where they were in the race. And, you know, they would have had that competitive drive. Whereas yeah. I think anyone else, it's just managing what's thrown at you rather than you racing as such. So I don't know how anyone can plan for the Spine race. I mean, even like the week before the race, the weather was looking quite favourable to the extent where people were texting me going, yeah, you're going to have the cheat year. I mean, look at that. It's not even cold. It's not even like raining or anything. And I was starting to worry because I was like, oh my God, it's going to be that year where it's going to be really mild and everyone will just think it's a breeze. And then on day two, we got Storm Brendan. And I never thought in the run up to that race that I would have to face those kind of conditions. So like everyone else, I was completely unprepared for that because, you know, if there's a named storm, you're not going to go up a hill and go, well, do you know what? I'll go and test my kit or I'll go and test what it's like to eat a flapjack in 120 mile per hour winds. So you can prepare as much as you can. But I think you really need to prepare for the unexpected. Yeah. So, yeah, it's kind of like a hard one to plan for because every year is completely different, right? You know, I was supposed to go back and do it this month and everyone's like, why are you going back and what do you want to achieve? And I'm like, I don't know if I can compare last year because on Saturday morning, like the race was supposed to start on Friday this year. And on Saturday morning in Glasgow, when I went out, it was -8 and it was like really icy and cold. Whereas last year it was quite mild, but really wet and really windy. And you know, think, yeah, the frost and the ice would have been better because at least you're not sinking 3 feet into a bog because you've got a bit of traction. But days with Cthulhas on would destroy my Achilles and my feet. So yeah, I think the Great British weather will decide how your race is going to go at that time of the year. Yeah. So yeah, preparing.
And did you sleep much, Devin?
Sorry?
Did you sleep much
I had maybe like an hour a night if you just average it across the night, maybe a little bit more. But unfortunately, the way my race worked out, that I was going into checkpoints in daylight. And when you've only got 8 hours of daylight, it becomes really precious. So it feels like such a waste to use it sleeping. But even just getting an hour of sleep is amazing. You just feel like a new person. So, yeah, I would have probably slept more or taken more time out if I'd gone into the checkpoints in the dark. But you really need to maximize daylight. It makes everything a little bit easier. I'll never take daylight for granted ever again, that's for sure.
And now, a cheeky little break whilst we hear from our sponsors, XL Coffee.
I'm Alex, the founder of XL Healthy Coffee. We launched in lockdown 2020 after spending years researching and testing coffees at independent labs across Europe to find the healthiest coffee on the market. So we're the first in the UK to source and roast speciality grade coffee to maximise its health benefits. If you want to check out our new healthy coffee, head over to xlcoffee.com where you can buy a sample or single bag. And I've set up a discount code Camino40 for listeners of this podcast to get 40% off their first bag and a subscription and free delivery.
You've talked on your blog, Debbie, about when you do big races, it's generally stuff that you're afraid of, and you talk about a fear factor and sort of being motivated by fear. Was the spine the one that you were most afraid of on the start line, or
I was pretty terrified. I was like crying with fear the day before, and it takes a lot for me to cry. I'm not really an emotional person, but I was terrified, and not just like the unknown. I just thought I was potentially putting myself in danger, because I get really incoherent in races and I don't look after myself properly. And so, yeah, I was terrified, but it didn't take away from the fact that I really wanted to do it. I like to choose races, not just that scare me, but just put fire in my belly. You know, I don't want to be that person that keeps doing the same race over and over again, trying to chase a time or chase a position. So I like to do things that excite me. I don't do a lot of races, but when I do it fully. I'm committed to it. So, and I like to plan specifically for one race or one or a couple of races every year rather than do far too many half-arsed. I just choose races that excite me, basically.
Do you think you would have been just as afraid this time round going into the spine?
I don't know because, yeah, it depends what conditions you're going to be facing. I don't think I'd have been excited about going out when it was -8 because it is quite a hostile place. You know, Crossfell has a weather station on it for a reason. It's not a pleasant place to be. And if you're lost in a snowstorm or I'm a bit disorientated in a snowstorm, I think I would still be quite scared about what I could potentially be putting myself into. I think every year I'd be a little bit more scared. And the fact that I've actually completed it won't distract from that, because anything can happen while you're out there. I think last year, you know, when I got myself into some really dark places and, you know, got myself in, I mean, I was terrified at some points. There was a snowstorm and I got completely lost up High Cut Neck, and I was really cold and soaked, and I was just genuinely scared for my own well-being. And I don't know if I would go back to the race. If you get yourself into those really dark places, whether I would have the motivation to pull myself out of it, because see, there would always be that little bit in your mind that says, I've already completed this. I don't need to prove anything to myself. Whereas last year, I had a lot to prove to myself because I really just wanted to finish it above everything. I just wanted to touch that wall in Kirkgetham. And that was my motivation to keep going when everything got a little bit dark. So there was a few bits in it where I did feel like I was putting myself in danger and I was on the cusp. Because I always said, if I thought I was endangering my life, then yeah, I would pull the plug on it, because at the end of the day, I'm someone's mother and that's way more important than any event. So when I got lost in High Cup Neck and I knew I had to go up Crossfell in a snowstorm in the dark by myself, and I was just really worried, and I text Marco and I said, I just can't go on. I'm just too scared. And I know, like, I was second in the race, but, I think it was just really good knowing that there was another woman ahead of me who was just out there, you know, just facing it head on. I mean, Sabrina is amazing. She's wired up completely different from any of the women I've ever met. And, you know, people will say to me, you know, did you want to win? Did you want to beat? Did you want to compete with her? And do you know what? I don't think there's many people that can compete with Sabrina. She's in a league of her own. But knowing that she was up there, just facing the storm head on, was a massive motivation for me. It was just very inspiring having her there. And I'm not sure I would be as motivated if I didn't have that person leading the way in front of me. So I can't even remember what you asked now. I've just kind of gone off.
It's wonderful. It's great. It's great to hear you. Honestly, it's great to hear you chat about that stuff. It's, I think it's something that, well, I mean, there's something that's, that happens to everyone probably in ultras is what you talked about, but that particular circumstance is like multiplied by 100. That's for sure. So I think we're gonna try something slightly different here.
Oh my god!
this is our attempt to bring a little bit of entertainment to the podcast. So Debbie, we're calling this the Ultra Face Off Quiz.
Okay. And
what we're going to do is we're going to give you two ultra running options that you have to pick between, you don't have to answer, because there might be, like, I don't know, you might have sponsors or something that might be in here. I've tried to avoid your sponsors, but if you don't want to answer, just say that's fine. It'd be interesting to get your takes on these. So the first one is Garmin versus Suunto.
Garmin.
Next one's Tailwind versus Morrison.
Oh, I use them both.
Good answer.
I use Tailwind a lot for training, and Morton I only use really for races. That's not going to answer your question, is
that's
it?
That's fine. That's a neutral 50-50.
Okay.
The next one's probably more important than Tailwind versus Morton. Jelly babies versus cola bottles.
Oh, cola bottles.
Cola bottles, good answer. Yeah.
Only because I ate so many jelly babies when I first started ultra running either. It's kind of like, you know, that food that you just physically can't eat anymore, like Mrs. Tilly's fudge makes me want to bomb just thinking about it. So no offense to jelly babies, but it's the mass consumption that did that.
That's a problem, yeah. Okay. Jammy sandwiches versus sausage rolls.
I don't eat meat, so I'd have to go with jammy sandwiches.
Jammy sandwich. All right. Sis gel versus goo gel.
Sis gels are just as good as taking a breath of fresh air, so I would say goo gel.
Damn, I've been using the wrong gels.
They're not going to be phoning me to take me on, are they? They're rubbish.
No.
Goo. No, exactly. Goo are really, really good once you can physically get them down. It is like swallowing a tennis ball, but they do have the desired impact. So goo.
Okay. Power nap versus push on through.
Push on through. Sleeping's cheating.
24-hour track race versus 100-mile trail race.
Oh, 100-mile trail race.
Oh, yeah. Debbie, that can't be true.
It's 100% true. You guys are just so strange.
We've seen you on the track, Debbie.
I've never finished a 24-hour track race. I did two. I tried to do Barcelona twice. The first time I was sick all the way out and Marco was sick all the way back. And the second time I just jacked it. So, yeah.
Yeah. But
one day, so, maybe.
That's the end of that quiz, actually.
Oh my goodness.
But I think that's really interesting to finish on that, on the 24-hour stuff, because that's been a pretty massive part of your career as well, isn't it? It's running for GB. Flying the flag.
I did my first 24-hour race.
How did you get selected, first of all, for GB?
Well, I ran on the Scotland 100K team for the Anglo-Celtic Plate. Okay. In 2010, I think it was, maybe 2011. And then there was a Commonwealth Ultra and Trail Championships in North Wales. I don't think it's run ever since. I think that was the last one they ever did. And I got selected for the Scotland team. And that was 2011. I had no idea what the qualifying distance was for the GB team. It was not even on my radar. Then, so I had no idea until the next day when Richard Brown, who was a GB team manager, who approached me when I was like getting held up by Marco getting out of the car. I was so broken. And he told me that I'd qualified for the GB team, and I didn't know then. That was the first time that I did it. And then I ran on the GB team the year after. So, yeah. And I did it for 5 years.
Spent a good five seasons, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think, yeah, you had some cracking results, didn't you, with the GB ladies? You medaled at a couple of championships.
Yeah, we had quite a few. Yeah, I can't tell you offhand now. I think there was one we missed out on the European gold by about 66 metres, I think, as a team. Yeah, I think that was in Poland. But yeah, we had quite a few team medals. Yeah, it was amazing and truly awful at the same time. Being part of the team was the best. It was such a great team to be involved in. Running around in circles for 24 hours is pretty excruciating, as you guys know.
And I find it amazing that you managed to, because it seems like, from everything you talk about and other stuff you do, like being in the mountains and the trail is kind of your home and your natural environment. Did you feel a sense of duty in a way to kind of do the team thing? Is that how you managed to kind of...
Did I? Yeah, I think maybe a little bit, but you know what? It's a massive privilege to be asked to run for your country. Yeah. So I don't take away from that. It wasn't like my duty to do it. When you're no. part of the team, it is your, you know, you're accountable, and it is your job to do the best that you can for the team. Yeah, it was it was a phenomenal experience, absolutely phenomenal. But yeah, I mean, I don't really pigeonhole myself into any specific running. And maybe okay. back then people just assumed that I was just a 24-hour runner, and I'm not anything. I like all running, apart from cross country. I can take or leave that. but I still do it. But I just like being outside, and I just love running and any kind of running. Whereas this year I've done so much road running because, you know, lockdown restrictions and working from home and stuff like that. It's just easier for me to go out the door and do a lot of road running. So maybe every year I just do something, focus a bit more, whereas previous years, you know, I had Tour de Gion and Trans Gran Canaria and UTMB and all the big kind of mountain races and the Bob Graham round. So I was spending a lot of time hiking up and down hills, whereas my focus was more on elevation. And yeah, maybe I just don't have that focus this year. So, and now that the spine has been cancelled, my next race is a 1 mile track race.
I remember you said, yeah. When's that due to be?
At May. So who knows whether that'll go ahead. Fingers crossed it doesn't.
Are you sure there's not supposed to be two extra zeros in the race literature?
Yeah, it'll be interesting, right? I don't know. It's a classic distance, isn't it? So something you have to focus on. We'll see. I had some club mates who did it last year and it looked kind of fun stroke awful. So yeah, we'll see how it goes.
When are we going to see you next, Debbie?
Nicky going to let us out of Scotland? Who knows? Wee Nicky's enjoying the fact that she can close the border and keep you all down there. Yeah. I have no idea. I'm kind of speaking to James at Centurion, see I might do one of them, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
I have no plans just now. I'm going to do the Lakeland 100 because that was rolled over from last year. If that goes ahead in July, who knows? We'll see.
Nice.
Yeah. When are you guys doing your Bob Graham? Have you not been talking about that forever?
Ouch.
Yes.
Yes. When is this going to happen?
Well.
Silence is deafening, guys.
Come on,
June,
Daz.
Debbie. June. It's going to happen in June. But
is this official?
Are you? Yes.
Okay, we're making it official. Yes, it's going to happen. We need to do the recces, and the recces are the problem at the moment.
Yeah,
so
the recces are so important.
Yeah,
I think it's a big undertaking, and people. I think the DNFs of it is really just people not appreciating the enormity of it. You know, it's hard. I mean, I'm so glad I did it, but I didn't underestimate it. I would have been delighted just to get 23:59 because I knew like the sub 24 is like quite a chunky target. Yeah. But yeah.
What did you end up with?
I think it was 23:18 or something. Yeah,
see, that's the thing. Like when I look at someone. Like you with your capabilities.
I am no fell runner. But
you're experienced, you're strong, you did all the recces, you would have had all the nav and all the kit down. And if I compare my 100 mile times to your 100 mile times, I'm like 6 hours behind you.
Yeah. So I struggled quite a lot. Like I think there was thunderstorms the night that I was going to start, and we kind of pushed it back a bit to start later. Right. And on leg two, I was jacking it. I had like the worst nausea. I just couldn't shake it. And at the end of leg two, I was like, I'm not continuing. It's not going to happen. It's not my day. And when I got to start leg three, James Elson had come from down south to come and do leg three with me, and my other friend Giles was there, and they traveled like huge distances, and I was like, I just can't quit and let them down like this. And then I started to feel much better on leg three, but I'd lost so much time. So when I started leg four, I was like, I'm really pushing it to get under 24 hours. So I did struggle quite a lot, and I think now when I look back, I think I'm so glad I didn't quit. But I had that window that weekend that I'd planned for people to come and help me. And it's not like you can just choose. I mean, obviously, like Beth Pascal this year, she's in a unique position where everyone wants to come and help Beth. So she chose the best window for that. Phenomenal. I just can't get my head around how fast she ran that. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Was she run about 15, 16?
It was just insane. I was just outside her time. whereas, you know, the weekend that I chose to do it, I think there was like 3 months of really nice weather, and I chose the shittest weekend in the middle of all that glorious weather. So the rocks were like really greasy, but I'm not saying that I would have ran it any faster. I'm really not, because I was just really glad to get it done in the 24 hours. But it is a big undertaking. But as long as you're mentally prepared and you know the route, you know, that's a big chunk of the battle there. Yeah. Just knowing what's going to come up. It's just, you know, I think I didn't really run a whole lot of it. I am no hill runner. I'm pretty rubbish at uphill and downhill. But yeah, you just got to keep chipping away at it. And if you know what's coming up, it makes such a difference.
Yeah.
It's not comparable to like a 100-mile trail race. It's really not. So I wouldn't compare my time to your time on that. It's just they're completely different.
Yeah, okay. Well, June then, David. Yes.
Bring it on, Dad.
You said it here.
Boom. Exciting.
It'll be great.
Yeah.
Just choose a good weather window. The clag there is just, James Ellison actually navigated it around with like a map and compass. He's like proper old school. And I was just tripping behind him with my grumpy face because I felt rubbish. He's probably really thrilled he made that trip all the way to look at my grumpy face. It's really good. But yeah, I think it's more achievable for people than most people think, but it really comes down to the planning of it and just not taking it for granted that it's just like a trail run or a hill run, because it's just not. You guys will be fine. Think of the gramming. My Instagram sensations.
David and I are having a question off at the moment.
Oh my
David,
goodness.
It's your turn, mate.
But I think, Debbie, the first time that I ever met you was you had your grumpy face on then. It was Spartathlon of 2015. Is that right? 2015.
Did you run it that year?
No, we were crewing that year.
Yeah.
And I said to you, would you ever run it again? And you said, there's no way I'm running this bloody race. Felt quite low down your wish list. Is it peaked back up again?
No. Again, it was one of those races that I was never, ever going to do because it looked horrendous. You can see a pattern here, can't you? I can't even remember the point where I decided I was going to sign up for it. You guys know it's a hard undertaking. Yeah, they just, you know, it's hot, it's road, they're throwing a mountain at 100 miles. It's just relentless, right? And there's no give, there's no switch off to it, because you're running along and there's lorries flying at you at 70 miles an hour. So you can't switch off. You can't switch on music and just shut down for a little bit. You've got signs every 3 minutes telling you how far you've got to go. And mentally, it's quite a hard undertaking, that race, because there is no switch off from it. It's just full on assault of all senses for quite a long time. I'm so glad I did it. Just experienced the last mile, the 152 miles before that, the take or leave. But I'm so glad I did it. And it's kind of weird because people did say to me before the race, you need to experience it to understand how magical the event is. And I was like, it's running along a road in Greece, sweating. I mean, how amazing can that be? But it's not until you're there and you embrace everything about the race, and you know yourself, the people just make it, right? But it's not until you do the race that you experience how wonderful it is. And I'm so glad I got to experience that, because it's pretty special. I don't think I'll ever be able to, I wish I could bottle that feeling of that last mile. Running into Sparta is just, it's right up there with one of the most amazing experiences of my life, for sure.
I think you got the kind of classic finish, didn't you, with the kids on bikes and the flick, one of them running up with you. So
yeah,
some great photographs. Yeah.
I got the pictures when I look back, because you don't realize what's happening round about you because you just focus on getting to the statue without falling on your face. And it's not until you see the pictures that you see the people who are there and just cheering for someone they don't even know, and they've been waiting there for ages, and the kids on the bikes and everything. It's just, yeah, I'm glad I got to experience the authentic Spartathlon, that's for sure.
That's pretty cool. So what's left then, Debbie? I mean, you've kind of you've done so much. I mean, are you attracted to sort of any big multi-day stuff like joggle or going across America or crazy stuff like that?
No, I did it. I ran with Dan twice. Obviously, his attempt this year, and I did 30 miles on the A9 inside the White Line, going through the Cairngorms, and it's quite an experience. It definitely put me off.
Yeah, it sounds awful.
Yeah, I think you need to be quite special, and as we know, Dan is in a league of his own when it comes to special.
Taps off.
He was definitely taps off. It was roasting in Scotland that day. Yeah, it's really brutal, and I only did 30 miles of it, and yeah, my happy face wasn't on that day either. But it was I was really glad that I got to see Dan doing what he did, because yeah, it's, I can't even put it into words how amazing he is. Like, if we stopped to get him some water, it would take you a good mile to catch up with him, because he's so focused that, you know, he was just chipping away at it. His mental strength is quite phenomenal. So it was amazing just to see that, but 100% it's not on my radar. And please quote me on that, because obviously I say this quite a lot throughout my life, and before I know it, I find myself doing something. Yeah, I think that amount of road would just play havoc with my shins, to be honest.
I think there's probably a trail FKT though, Debbie.
I'm fine with that. I'm just, yeah. Yeah. It's
might be like 1,000 miles instead of 900 and whatever it is. But
I think that amount of road, and again, that not being able to shut down, and that having the, I mean, when we were running on the A9, and if I was driving on the A9 and saw three people running, I would be like, someone call the cops.
Call the cops,
But there was only a handful of people that were just a little bit pissed off about it, but most people were really, I don't know whether they just ran that, they knew what we were doing or something, but most people were really respectful. But yeah, it's quite something. And that was only like 30 miles of it, so... in terms of like the big events, you know, I've been trying to get into Western States for 300 years, as you know, Darren, because we catch up every year about this.
Every year around Christmas
time. Every year. Hiya, are we going to get in? No. so I don't know how many years I've been trying, but they've got to let me in eventually, right? So...
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's the reason why I wanted to do the Lakeland. Well, one of the reasons I want to do the Lakeland 100 again. It's amazing, and that's why I want to do it again. But to get qualified as well, to for them to reject me yet again.
Yeah, keeps, so that, I wanna do, keeps that ticket going, doesn't it?
Yeah. So I want to do Western States, and I want to do Badwater.
Ooh.
You know, because I'm a wee ginger lassie from Glasgow who can't run. Who can't run in anything above 14 degrees? But yeah. Badwater's definitely on my radar for
What's for the kind of application process like?
I haven't even started that. My focus is Western States, and then we'll see where I get to. Yeah, I don't really know, to be honest. I always think, like, when I start, I don't want to tick boxes and stuff. Once I've experienced things, I somehow think that maybe I will get to the end of my bucket list, but it's not going to happen. I'll always find something else. So
yeah, the bucket list keeps getting stuff added, yeah.
Yeah, I would love to do the Hebridean Way this summer, if there's no events. So, yeah, me and a couple of my friends are keen to do that. So we'll see where it takes us. Who knows?
That's awesome.
No, it's awesome. Right for our track race. Although I keep saying that I need to actually go and finish one, as I kind of get that monkey off my back, but I can do that anytime, right?
Your PB for 24-hour track is like what, two two 223, 225 or something?
No, that's actually the road. That was in Turin. So I haven't actually completed a 24-hour track race. A DNF, two of them.
You can't DNF a 24-hour race. So Debs,
you can, though, right? I'm the first one I did 12K. I was the first one I went to Barcelona. I was sick all the way out, and Marco was sick all the way home. It was such a great weekend. And I started the race thinking I might feel better. And then I was like sick within the first hour and a half. And I finished so early that the organizers didn't know what to do with my chip. Just standing there like, what do you mean you finished? We've only just started. And I was like, yeah, I can't go on. Like, what are you doing? Why are you even here? So, I will go back and get that monkey off my back someday. Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe I'll just come and hang out with you guys. You seem to have so much fun. Maybe that's when there's a camera in your face.
That's just it. Well, what, at Gloucester? Yeah, no, we did have fun, actually. It was good. Yeah. We haven't set a date for it yet, but we're thinking of putting on an indoor track race down here.
There's only one thing worse than a track race, and that's got to be an indoor track race.
Sign Debbie up. She wants in.
Will you be our flagship runner, Debbie?
No, I'm not going to lie. Is it going to be like the warm-up or track that goes around the track, or is it going to be an actual track? Because there's that one they do in
Bislett. Yeah, no,
yes, and they run around the warm-up area.
Yeah,
this
is a proper
excruciating.
It's a proper track. We thought that might, it might be something different. That's not, I don't think the UK has such a thing at the moment, so it might be something to add on to the calendar.
Yeah, never say never. When is it?
June.
Thing is, like, see, you know what the problem I have with the indoor track race is? Like, my nose runs like a tap, and I'm forever just like snot rocketing. And what would I do? I'd have to run around like packets of hankies.
Just wear a mask with a filter.
Just fill it up with my snot. My nose runs like really bad when I run, and that's why I have issues. At least it'll stop the guys from peeing on the track, though, right?
Yeah, absolutely. What's another Scottish word for you, David? Snotters.
Snotters.
Is that a Scottish word?
Yeah, that's maybe. Have you heard that word before, David? Snotters?
No.
No.
Do you know what? You're probably right, because sometimes I put it in a text message and it auto-corrects it. And I'm like, snotters is an actual word. Although my phone actually doesn't. It used to auto-correct pish to posh, and now it doesn't. My phone's now fluent in Debs.
Brilliant.
All right. Well, we've taken up an hour of your time, Debbie. We'll leave it there.
Back to the grind.
Back to the grind. Yeah, thanks. Mm. Thanks so much for.
Thank you for having me on. It was lovely to speak to you. And I look forward to hearing all about your Bob Graham training.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to hold us accountable, aren't you? Yeah.
Well, you know what? If you need me to come and give you a hand, I'll come and give you a hand. I'm not doing leg one or two or three.
Okay. legs four and five. That would be incredible, actually.
Leg four. Maybe leg three. I'm definitely not doing leg one. That's a stinker.
That's the one. Yeah. That's the one we need to recce first, isn't it, Daz?
But that's leg only one. Up Skiddaw and round to Threlkeld, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a horrible leg.
Oh, is it? Okay. Mm. Is that because that's where you're getting up onto the top, so it's just all...
No, it's just... Yeah, I think when you come off Skiddaw and that whole section all there, it's just... It's not pleasant. Okay. Leg three is really good. But yeah, just get out there and...
Give it a go.
They're all really good. They're all really good.
We've got the vans. We've got the vans for it, so we've got a place to stay.
Well, that's a start.
Yeah.
I mean, you're crushing it.
Yeah.
Is that how you explained it to your wives? We need to get a van so we can do the Bob Graham round.
You do the Bob Graham. The first time she came out in the van, it broke down. And she said, I'm never getting in it again. So.
Did it actually break down, Darren?
It actually did break down.
You're just like casually, it's not starting. I don't think you should ever come on my road trips ever again.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, it was lovely to speak to you guys.
And you, Debbie, look after
stay
yourself.
Stay safe.
We'll see you. We'll see you out there sometime. Yeah.
Goodness gracious me.
trouble. Doctor, I'm in trouble. Doctor, I'm in trouble. Oh, doctor, I'm in trouble.
Well, goodness gracious me.